I am here with someone who is a part of something I'm very envious of. I'm here with Spencer Bebon of Big Honey, and this is Behind the Artist with Will Baraski. So, when we met the first time, well, probably the only time, it was in Fraser Sound Studios, and when I was talking to Shayna on the first episode, I gave it just the flying color review because of just the atmosphere in that place was ridiculous. Like, I walked in and everyone was so welcoming, and then I see it's just a normal apartment, and everyone's like, all right, we're going to go into the studio, and I'm like, where's this fucking studio? And I turn, and it's a full sound studio, and I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen inside of an apartment. And you are the manager there.
I am. That's correct.
So talk to me about how that all comes together. Let's say from the beginning.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it. I mean, well, we can take this back to like 2008 or so.
Oh, wow.
So I'm from Connecticut. Gotcha. My roommates and I, we all grew up in like the Fairfield County area. So I'm from Fairfield. One of my other roommates from Fairfield, Westport, Darien, that whole area. And pretty much we all met through a music program, and we were in middle school called School of Rock.
Awesome.
Which, yeah, just like the movie. Even cooler though, it's like it's this amazing after school program where you go, you get like a private lesson, and then it's like a performance based program. So it kind of ends like every couple of months, like you just do a show with all of these kids that you've been rehearsing with. And you know, I started doing it when I was in like seventh grade. And really quickly, like, found, like, some of just, like, my all-time best friends.
That's unbelievable.
A few of those people were Kit Conway and Colin Fraser.
Both
of,
awesome.
Of Fraser Sounds. So pretty much, yeah, just been playing music with those dudes, like, my entire life. Like, in bands from eighth grade on with Kit.
Jesus Christ.
And so Fraser has a pretty interesting story. We all moved to New York in, like, 2019. Kit had been there years before. He went to NYU. He went to Clive Davis there. So he'd been in the city since like 2014 or so. A few of us moved in. We were in like, you know, like a really like shitty, like 5-floor walk up situation in East Village, paying like way too much money.
The market at that time is, I mean, it's still crazy, but
yeah, it was 2019. Like, it was like criminal though. And we were young. Like, we had no idea like what we were doing.
Yeah.
And we, you know, moved in like September 2019. Obviously, like March hits, you know, the whole world, you know, kind of collapses from COVID. And a bunch of us were actually laid off from our jobs and we're just back in Connecticut, like living with our parents.
Okay.
And so Colin specifically was like, you know what? Like, I'm just going to like get a little studio set up going in my dad's basement. So that's where Fraser was actually born, was just at his dad's house in Westport. We spent like that 6 months home, just kind of like, you know, going there after whatever and hanging out, and him and Kit really started hitting it hard. And then we were literally gifted that house through Street Easy, just like essentially like it's October 2020. Like, everyone is moving out of New York City, right?
Yeah.
And this place just pops up, and a few of our friends like went over that day, checked it out. We're like, wow, like this is actually like an amazing spot. Like, we should definitely sign.
Mm.
And we just, the minute we walked in, we saw the living room and we saw that, hey, like there's a serious opportunity to like have like a very legit studio in this place. So we moved it from Colin's basement to that house, and have been just kind of, you know, building and, you know, fostering this community there for the last 4 years now.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Like, yeah. And the fact that you found it and had people go over there that day is, that's like, that's a dream setup.
Yeah.
That's dream circumstance.
Exactly. Like, sometimes people come in and they're like visiting New York and they're like, oh my God, this is great. Like, I'm going to get a place like this. And I'm like,
yeah, good luck.
I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, good luck.
And, you know, but like, again, it's a very fortunate situation, but we also wanted to really make sure that we were making the best use of that space. You know, we definitely recognize that it's a great situation for us, and it's no good if we're not able to, you know, share it with other people and be able to do Fraser showcases and, you know, other industry events that we host there. You know, it's kind of our way of like, you know, sharing it with people. You know, we always say an empty studio is a sad studio.
Yeah. And it was not empty that night.
Yeah.
That was a packed house.
Yeah. Super fun. Super fun.
Yeah. How often do you guys do those?
We do them. We try to do them like once every like season. So like every like 3 months or so. That was our second one we had done. We did one back in like November, December, and it was great. So nice. Trying to get more on the books. But yeah, that's just like a special night to bring people together through music and food and drinks, all that stuff. It's a pleasure for us to honestly host that.
Yeah, it's really cool. So tell me about your start in music. Where did it begin for you? Is it back in Connecticut with all of your friends and that? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It goes even further back. I like got a guitar as a present from my grandparents when I was like 10 years old, and I kind of just like clunked around my house for a while. And I had like a pool growing up, and the guy who came and cleaned our pool on the weekends like came inside one day and just started playing it and was like really good.
Nice.
So my dad was like, hey, like, you know, can you give my son lessons? And he ended up being this guy, Pete Hole, who came from a really accomplished like musical family. His brother was like the bass player in Aerosmith for years.
Jesus
and like
Christ.
So this guy just like would come in and just teach me how to play songs when I was like 10 years old, and took lessons from him for like 4 years. Had my first band when I was in fifth grade with my good friend Will Corona, who actually plays bass in Big Honey and our other projects to this day.
Very nice.
Love you, Will. And yeah, just it's been just kind of a thing I've always done, you know. Started playing guitar really early, did other music programs in school. I played cello in college and sang. Just has always just been a constant in my life of like, oh, like I want to be in a band, and just, you know, going and creating and playing out has just been, you know, a fun thing I've gotten to enjoy in my life so far.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like finding something and really sticking with it. Like just from a very young age. Mm-hmm. And to be inspired by someone who like out of nowhere kind of.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really, really cool situation. And, you know, I still keep in contact with
teachers
and stuff like that. Cause they definitely, you know, helped shape me into, you know, the musician and just like person I am today. So I owe a lot to them.
Nice. How many talent shows have you done for 5th, 6th, 7th grade?
A lot.
High school.
Oh yeah. A lot. Definitely was like the kid that was like, I was like asking my teacher in elementary school if I could bring my guitar in. And like, you know, was constantly, you know, just doing all that stuff, any excuse I could to just get up and play and, you know, bring others, you know, with. And, you know, that was always a lot of fun growing up.
Nice. Nice. So let's talk Big Honey. Because when I did see you guys at the showcase, it was Little Honey.
It was.
It was considered Little Honey.
It was.
You guys have two songs on Spotify
that
I've had on repeat for probably the last 4 or 5 days.
There we go.
What has been the writing process? Like, how has that process been like? Because you have a very distinct sound. It's 70s, but it feels modern.
Yeah.
And that's something I really, like, sink my teeth into. How did you find out throughout your life, like, this is the kind of music I want to play and perform?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. Because, yeah, like, I started in, like, a little, like, pop rock group and then was in, like, this kind of, like, progressive indie band. And then when I was in high school, my buddies and I, we had a band called Rabbit's Foot. And
okay.
We played around, like, the city, you know, a ton in high school and college. And it was at, you know, around the ages of, like, 16 to 18 that I just kind of found, like, soul music and funk music for the first time. And, you know, that was a really like eye opening experience for me. And then I want to say I was probably like 20 years old and, I heard the band The Dip for the first time.
They're good.
And
they're real good.
When I listened to them, that was like a cathartic moment in, you know, for me where I was like, wow, like, holy shit. Like, this is it. Like,
yeah.
This is exactly the style of music. Like, just in terms of something that is can be high rhythm but also chill and have the dynamics of like a horn section and good like lead vocals, that was kind of really like the like the oh my god moment for me. And when Rabbit's Foot, you know, stopped playing together in probably like 2018, I knew that I really wanted to introduce horns and kind of more of like a big band feel. Mm. So that was really the impetus behind Big Honey, you know, was just getting like a big band together with my friends and something that would, you know, it could have a really powerful sound on stage and like really like leave an impact when people came and saw us.
Yeah. You are starting performances tomorrow, you said?
I am, yeah.
It's the reason why we're not drinking beers right now.
Exactly. I would be drinking a nice Juice Bomb IPA right now, but we've got a nice little 3-show run coming up. We've got a Park City Music Hall in Bridgeport, Connecticut tomorrow night.
Okay.
The Middle East in Boston on Friday, and then coming home to Drom in East Village on Saturday. Yeah.
Okay.
And we got a killer lineup. It's going to be a ton of fun, but definitely on voice rest for the last couple of days.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is I've always been curious about voice rest because I've watched behind the scenes of, like, I've watched the Nothing But Thieves.
Oh yeah, of course.
They're so good. I'm going to see them in October in Pier 17. But Connor was just wearing a sign that said on vocal rest, mm-hmm. don't talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like? Can you not like push your voice, or is it just like you try to avoid speaking as much as possible, and it's kind of
mm-hmm.
like ironic that you're on a podcast right now? But.
Yeah, no, I mean, hey, it you know, it differs for everybody. For me, it's like the days leading up to the show, like I just don't want to like push my voice like super hard, and obviously like not do anything that's going to like affect my voice at all, you know. For like me, like talking and stuff and doing all that is like totally fine, but like I don't know, like if you've ever seen us live or listened to us, but it's like, you know, I really try to like belt a lot when I'm going, so like I have to like preserve like that upper register for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for me it's like, you know, I drink a lot of like hot fluids, drink a ton of water these couple of days to really just hydrate my vocal cords and just like give myself the best chance to like be able to like go as hard as I can these next couple of days without just totally losing it, you know. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like the term vocal rest, I feel like could be used for a lot of people that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that talked way too much, and that's the kind of vocal rest I want them to be on.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's interesting. Like I've never really considered the fact that night in and night out, people have to perform and, like you said, drink hot fluids, drink a ton of water just to make sure they're hydrated. Their vocal cords are hydrated.
Steam a lot. I do a lot of like, I've got little steam apparatus, and I like inhale that to like, you know, loosen up any mucus and stuff. And again, it differs for every, you know, person individually. But I know a lot of people do like the throat coat tea and even like won't talk for like a day before their show.
That's what I feel like it would be.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. When is that show on Saturday? What time is that show?
I believe we hit at like 8. We've got an incredible opener, Rebecca McCartney, who's coming out. Us and then our good friend Andrew Pearson, who we're doing the run with, who also played at the showcase.
I'm going to see if he wants to jump on the podcast. I'd love to talk to him for a little bit.
He's the man. You definitely should have him, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, come through.
8 o'clock. You heard 8
o'clock,
that.
8 p.m. sharp.
But
7 p.m. for Rebecca.
And yeah.
It's, you know, it's just as important to be out there supporting the opening act, you know.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly about that for all shows we play. Mm. People like are like, oh, what time are you on? I'm always telling them like an hour and a half early.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. What is, like personally, well, let me ask this. What is the writing process like as a band? Mm-hmm. Do you guys start, I think I asked Rachel this, do you start with just instrumentation, or do you write on the side? You're like, oh, this could go well with this.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Like, as a big band, and you guys are more than a few people.
Yeah.
What is that like, and how do you guys handle disagreements in terms of, like, not being locked in on a creative level as much as maybe some other people would hope?
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky that we actually haven't run into any like huge problems like that yet, at least. But
okay,
I guess, yeah, like the way that like our process works is You know, I do, I write a lot of the songs and at least a lot of the starter ideas.
Okay.
Really how it kind of goes down is like, I'll come up with an idea. I might have like a hook or something like that. And then, during like a rehearsal or something, we'll just jam on it and we'll see like what feels good. And, you know, like, because I might have an idea in my head that I'm like, oh, like this is exactly how like this song should go. But then we actually get in the room and play it. Like it might not translate the way that I would like hope it would off the bat.
Yeah.
But if like my drummer's like, actually, like, I think we should like go with like a slightly, you know, more like kick drum heavy groove, or like my guitar player or bass player have other ideas, I'm like, I'm super open to that and I actually really want that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's something that, you know, a lot of people who are like the front man or woman of a band can, you know, resonate with, is that sometimes it's, especially if it's like kind of your project and you're getting the players together and stuff like that, you really don't want it to become like kind of like a dictatorship type situation. Yeah. Where you're just like telling people what to do. Some people want that. Some people are just like, hey, like I write the songs and I just want you to play them.
Mm.
I'm really not driven by that. I want it to be as collaborative as possible.
Yeah.
And I have a ton of respect for my players. Yeah. So like I have the utmost confidence that like if they have an idea, like 9 times out of 10, like it kicks ass.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm really fortunate that I'm in that position where, you know, I don't have a lot of pushback if somebody has, you know, a creative thought or something that they want to inject, because yeah, like I love my players. I respect them a lot as musicians. So yeah, long story short, it's like I come with an idea, we'll like kind of refine it. And then I lyrics is the part of the writing process that I struggle with the most.
Really?
Yeah. I can write like 100, you know, rhythm sections or riffs or whatever like that. When I actually have to like get down to the brass tacks and like write the song, it generally will take like, you know, 5 times as long as the rest of the writing process for whatever reason. So sometimes like I'll bring in friends, you know, I've got my, like Kit has helped me with lyrics or refining lyrics on certain things. And I've got plenty of other like talented friends who also, you know, write all the time. And, so sometimes, yeah, I'll like call them in if I need the help, and that can kind of get like an idea totally across the finish line.
Cause I feel like that's the most bare part of a song.
Yeah.
If we're going to talk about just like songwriting in general,
mm-hmm.
I guess maybe I know some people listen to like soul funk and for like the instrumentation, but, some of the songs that have been written in history have the most like profound lyrics.
Yeah.
And I guess from that perspective, it's as bare as it gets. But I think, like you said, it's important to, if you're struggling, to have the people that you can reach out to, especially people that are as talented as mm-hmm. the people that were in the room during the showcase.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
What, we said the Dip, and they're phenomenal.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Are there any other bands that you currently listen to that you draw a lot of inspiration from?
Absolutely, yeah. I really love Lake Street Dive.
They're so good.
They've been a huge inspiration of mine for years. I've seen them a bunch. Man, like St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
They're fucking phenomenal too.
The Black Pumas.
I saw them in Radio City earlier this year.
Yeah, they played at like the Brooklyn Paramount earlier this week and I was crushed. I couldn't go. The Fruit Bats.
Okay. I'm not familiar with them.
They're awesome. You know, pretty much just like, again, I've really dug deep into like that new age kind of soul funky pop sound. And there's a really cool pocket of musicians right now who are all doing this thing and, you know, doing really well, which is nice. Like encouraging to see that like, hey, like these bands are,
yeah, there's a lot going on,
are doing this thing. But I'd say those are kind of like the main inspirations, but also, you know, it's like, I'm big on, like my Discover Weekly and other like Spotify playlists.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll just find like a one-off song through those and I'll just throw them in a playlist. And it's not necessarily like I'm so keyed into like these, you know, handful of artists. I try to like keep the range pretty wide.
Mm. During the showcase, you brought out, her name is Big Ron on Instagram, but it's Veronica from Melt.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Like, how long has your friendship been a thing? Because she's phenomenal. Like,
yeah.
I found out about Melt through that show, and I'm like, these
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, yeah, Mel is amazing. I'm actually fortunate enough to, I do some work with them. Okay. I've gone on tour with them, you know, running their merch. I'm going on this upcoming run with them as well in October. Pretty much one of our good friends, so Kit, who I've mentioned a couple times, yeah. His band Stello, one of their drummers, Isaiah, was hired to play a show with Mel like over 2 years ago now. And a few of us went and got to know the band like through that. And then, what really kind of like solidified our friendship with them was that like a week before their fall tour in 2022, they had a couple of crew members like drop out. And they were really looking for like a front of house engineer to run their sound. And my roommate, Colin Fraser, yep. You know, the founder of Fraser Sound Studios, we were like out at a bar drinking with them, like after one of their like side project shows. And, they pretty much just asked him on the spot if he just wanted it.
Wow.
And he took it with like a week's notice and ended up just like going out on the road with them for like, you know, 4 weeks. And, just through that, you know, obviously he got close to them and we all started hanging out a lot more. And, now, yeah, just they're incredible people. Like some of like, you know, my closer friends right now, which is, you know, awesome. Marlo, the guitar player, is actually playing in Big Honey, for these upcoming shows.
Very nice.
You know, Lucas, the bass player, he runs, an awesome studio with Eric, the keys player in Brooklyn. And, you know, we've got a great relationship with them. And then with Ron specifically, you know, Ron, we've been doing some more writing together and they write with, you know, Kit, in the house a lot as well. And so that's how that whole situation came about. It's like we just wrote this song together a couple of months ago, and it's a little project that we have kind of buried in the closet right now.
Okay.
We're just, you know, making some tracks for and just having fun with it.
Nice.
And that was the first time we'd ever, you know, done that song, like, that's outside cool. of just like, you know, the studio.
You're just so, jamming.
Yeah, we're just jamming, having fun.
That's awesome.
And they're obviously all like, yeah, insane musicians. So that was a lot of fun. I was happy that we were able to pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, the way it was performed, I mean, she came in and just ripped.
Yeah. I mean, one of the, not to pump their tires, but like probably one of the best voices in New York City, hands down.
Yeah, I was listening to Melt at work today, and I'm like, there were moments in time where I had to stop what I was doing and just listen.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
She's unbelievable.
They've got it. They've got the juice for sure.
Yeah, they found it.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. Like,
so for ask, me, I'm like, I can't believe I even get to make music with these people. Yeah. Like, this is awesome.
And to ask Colin on the spot, that had to be such a high-pressure situation for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was like, you know, I think we were, like, at drinks, and it was kind of like, they were like, oh, if only we knew somebody who ran sound. And, like, everybody, like, looked at him. And I think there was a moment where it was like, okay, like, this could just be, like, bar talk, you know, who knows. And it was, like, the next day, they were like, oh, we were, like, actually serious. And it was like, okay, like,
What time of day did they call him? Was it first thing in the morning? Like, dude, hungover, but we need you.
It was like something. It was within the next 24 hours. It was like, okay, no, this is like a real opportunity for him. And, you know, he was obviously stoked. And, yeah, it's been just great getting to know them, you know, through all of that.
That's awesome. They just put out Fake Romantic a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago. And I'm excited for that project because I'm locked into their career now.
Yeah, the album is unbelievable. They've done, you know, incredible work on that with Sam Evian. Plant the Garden, also an incredible tune as well.
Yeah. You just put out Niagara a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, about a month ago.
Do you have another date for the next single, or
I don't have a date, but we're working hard right now. We've got one that, you know, we're actually putting the finishing touches on in the next week or two.
Nice.
That I'm super excited for. I'd say brand new Niagara were like just like the early kind of writings of the group. And I think that these next couple of songs that we've written, we've been performing live and are releasing, I'm super proud of these ones. I think I took a real honest shot at trying to like improve the lyrical aspect of my writing through these ones. And they're a bit deeper than the first two. So I'm extremely excited for them. But hopefully in the next, you know, month, 6 weeks or something like that, we'll have something out into the world.
How often in your songwriting do you pull from personal experience?
100% of the time. Yeah.
Because I feel like it's different with everybody, because like some songs that you hear, and I guess this is a bit of an exaggeration, but like all of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, mm-hmm. I'm like, what is going on there? I guess because if you write some of the best songs ever, you kind of run stale. Yeah. So it's 100%.
100%. And that's why, honestly, I was saying before, the lyrical aspect is the thing that takes the most time for me, is because I have a tough time, you know, connecting and like writing and connecting with something that I've written if it's not, you know, based in truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's just kind of the way that, you know, my brain like really works with writing music, is that for me, like, music is such an outlet for, you know, my emotions, and it's a way for me to kind of like talk about things that I might not normally talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, yeah, for some reason, like if I'm given like a prompt on something, you know, like I'm sure I could write, but I won't have that same kind of like connection to it if I'm out there playing it live.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was my next question. Do you like journal at all, or
not
like
really
try and get your feelings out on paper?
Not really, unfortunately.
Not in a musical
sense. I should. I really should. It's tough. Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, it's like, I know everybody is different in that sense as well. Mm. You know, and for me, it just is, like I said, just something that I use to channel certain things, and like for good and for bad. You know, like a couple of the songs, like Brand New and Niagara, are both very like, you know, happy in nature, and mm-hmm. have like, you know, a great kind of like fun meaning behind it. And the other ones too, it's just like, again, it's just something that you got to do. You know, for me, it's like music is less about like, oh, I have to like, you know, get famous or something with this.
Yeah.
It's more of like, oh, I just really like to do this, and I kind of need to do this.
Mm-hmm. Completely off topic question, because it's something that's been stuck in my head since I seen it. Do you watch Marvel movies?
I've seen them. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I did a watch through of the Marvel Cinematic Universe like one time. Just like was like started with like Captain America, right?
Yeah.
And went like all the way through to Endgame.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is I just saw Deadpool and Wolverine on Thursday.
Okay.
And I've been like trying to find people to talk about it with. Yeah. And like I'm like, that entire movie was a clusterfuck of just different characters and different cameos.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not gonna dive into it.
But if we want to talk about something outside of music, I do see a Rangers jersey right there.
Oh yeah.
Are you a Rangers fan?
Oh, huge.
I'm also a massive Rangers fan.
Okay.
Like big time.
All right, let's talk about it.
Let's talk.
Because I could do another 45.
Let's do it,
Rangers,
dude.
Just talk.
We just quick audible to just
we're gonna talk about
fight in blue shirts.
Two Ranger fans talking about the state of the team. I've been asking people a lot. How do you feel about them not getting rid of Trouba?
I feel really conflicted about this whole Trouba situation. I feel a bit embarrassed for the organization.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Jacob Trouba. I can't.
Yeah,
I'm not the biggest Trouba defender as a player.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was responsible for like 70% of the goals in the Florida series
while
he was on the ice. It's like a crazy stat like that. I think we are paying him way too much.
We are.
For
what he provides on the ice.
Yeah, exactly. And I understand he's got, you know, his intangible assets off the ice. I've heard that he's a great guy in the locker room. He clearly gives back to the community.
Yeah.
That's our captain right there. But I would like to see us win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, paying somebody $8 million to, you know, just throw himself at the boards is not really what I'm looking for in a defenseman. I think we could probably get somebody comparable for like $4 million AAV.
Yeah, I mean, we just re-signed Ryan Lindgren.
Ryan Lindgren today, yeah, like 4.5, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
1 year. I showed Shayna this because we were talking about just generational shit. My dad, way back in the day, he's a huge Ranger fan.
Yeah. Me too. Is it the 94 cup hat? No, not the cup hat. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah,
the boys.
I got to throw this in a frame somewhere.
Damn, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
So he's, I'm not going to say he's the most rational Ranger fan, but he's the reason why.
Yeah.
Why I am the way I am.
Dude, I mean, I just grew up watching games with my dad on the couch, and that's how I became a fan. I've got an older brother who's a huge fan as well.
How much older?
3 years.
My brother's 7 years.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So he's 31. Funny story about this team too, though. My, like, one of my best friends growing up, his dad lived in Manhattan in 94, and his next door neighbor was
Knicks fan.
Mark Messier.
No fucking
way. And so they won the cup in 94, and like my buddy's dad was like at the after party and stuff, and
Jesus.
his older sister at the time was like a baby and has like a picture like sitting in the Stanley Cup
Jesus.
In 1994.
I think that's the dream.
It is. Yeah. I would give up a lot to see the Rangers win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Nothing music related, but I would give up a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I say my dad isn't the most rational because he still thinks Capo Caco is going to be a decent player.
You got to believe. You got to believe.
Not in him. Not in him.
He's a perennial third liner, you know?
That's
and
what
that's
I keep
fine.
Him.
That's
and
okay.
No, it's not good.
Yeah.
Fucking second overall pick. I was at the draft party when they drafted
him. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, but hey, look at our boy Laugh.
I've been telling people about him. Him and Hedl.
Yeah.
I've been talking about that's a Hedl jersey.
I knew that was either a Leakes jersey. It wasn't going to be a Johnny Brodzinski jersey, but
no. Great guy though.
Yeah,
great
good guy.
Though. My
yeah.
One of my buddies that I met in high school, he owns his own like car detailing company.
Okay,
and he ended up just reaching out to a bunch of Rangers. Johnny Brodzinski hit him back, and he went and got his car like detailed completely, and they hit it off, and he was like, listen, if my family's not going to the game, like, you guys can have my tickets.
That's sick.
And they ended up going. They ended up meeting, like, Kreider.
Oh, shit.
Trocheck, Fox, all these
That's
guys.
That's so cool.
They're like, oh, how are you, like, here?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
we
yeah.
don't recognize you from anybody.
That's so
like,
funny.
Like, oh, we're here with Brodzy. He's like, oh, how'd you meet him? He goes, we own a detailing company out in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, oh, I get my car. This is Fox talking to him.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I get my car detailed, but, like, I'll come through to you guys if it means supporting local business.
That's sick, yeah.
So, yeah, he's been detailing
love that.
Cars.
Really
I think
cool.
They did the fire engines for the stadium series.
Oh, okay, nice.
Which was crazy.
That, yeah, that was, I mean, also.
I was there.
Oh, my dude.
Yeah,
my buddy was hitting me up, like, the entire week before, being like, we got to go, we got to go. And I had something going on. I might have had a show the next day, or I had, like, sessions or something. And, yeah. Massive regret not going because that was like one of the most unbelievable games I've ever
it's
seen.
It's
the
best
life.
Game I've ever been to. I think it's the best game I'll ever go to.
Yeah, that's
in my
great.
Life.
I went to the Winter Classic in like
18.
No, it was like 2012 or something like that.
That
against, against the Flyers.
Okay.
Yeah, where Lundqvist stopped the Briere
yeah.
penalty shot. That was electric. That was a really cool time.
It's nice. I ended up working. I used to work at Citi Field doing security.
Oh, nice.
And it was during the Winter Classic.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my first event. I got hired like 3 months prior, and there wasn't really any work
because
the MLB season was done and
yeah,
the Mets
yeah.
weren't in the playoffs because I don't even get me started.
Are you
with
Mets
them.
Fan too?
Yeah.
I'm a Mets fan too.
Hey, we're on the come up. We
yeah.
lost today, but
yeah.
we're on the come up.
Let's go Grimace.
But I was, I still can't believe he's been the rallying
yeah.
call for this team. But I worked at Citi Field in 2018 doing security. And they got me there on January 1st at, like, I don't know, 7 in the morning. So you just have people going back and forth, back
yeah.
and forth. And I'm standing there, freezing cold. I have a hot chocolate in a, like,
yeah.
a Keurig cup that's
nice.
Already cold
yep.
at, like, 8:30. And all of a sudden, I see this older gentleman, super short, white hair, with this woman walking toward me through center field. Coming to the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I look closer, and it's Mike Emmerich.
Oh, wow.
The infamous Mike Emmerich.
Doc.
And I tapped him. I was like, Mr. Emmerich, honor to meet you. Like, you've been the voice of my childhood, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, in his venture, oh, thank you. That's so
yeah.
nice of you to say. So I talked to him for like 5 minutes and it was freezing out. It was like 17 degrees out.
So cool.
He's like, all right, I got to go back to my trailer. I'm like, do whatever you got to do. And not even like 10 minutes later, the assistant comes out. And it was like a weird, they had a fence and there was like a staircase that went over the fence.
Okay.
I see the assistant come out with a tray of food. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? She gets my attention. She goes, hey, are you Will? I go, yeah. She goes, Doc wanted you to have this.
Wow.
And it was a full tray of food. It was a sandwich. It was a hot chocolate, banana, and a water.
A good guy.
I'm like, this guy is the greatest person that I could have ever experienced during that time. But it was great working there. I'm not going to say it was great working there, but working that event was so cool.
It sounds unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah. I saw Jackie Redmond. I saw Mike Rupp. I told him where what's the bar in City Field? McFadden's?
Yeah. And there's also like the K Corner now and stuff.
Yeah.
And
so he was like, where's the bar? I'm like, right down there, Mike.
Yeah.
I knew what he was doing. It was, I think it was before the game. So I guess he was just going to get a beer and then.
Good for him.
Hopping back. My shift ended as overtime started.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, all right, let me rush to the locker room, change, go upstairs to everybody was. And as I was changing my shoes, I heard the crowd erupt. I'm like, fucking. Damn,
I mean, it was like 30 seconds of overtime. Yeah.
We have a really like big knack for scoring OT goals in outdoor games. But yeah, that was electric. The locker room was literally shaking.
Yeah. I think that's kind of when I knew that it was like a really special team. I mean, obviously we had like, that was one of the most fun regular seasons I'd ever watched. Mm-hmm. You know, like Artemi just scoring at will, like, you know, honestly, like, Shesterkin like was not even that good in the beginning of the season. Jonathan Quick came up so clutch for us.
Seriously.
And just like seeing how just like complete of a team it was, I knew that we were going to go on a deep run. And then that Carolina series was just like such a roller coaster in terms of like, man, like those first three games, I was like, we're going to like sweep our way to the cup potentially.
Yeah.
And then, you know, games 4 and 5 being a nightmare. And then the miracle of game 6 and James Kreider just like was, man, I really thought this was going to be the year. I was really crushed to see it happen. But
Florida team was filthy.
They were so good, man. They worked us, you know.
Yeah, they did.
Like they, at the end of that series, I could only tip my hat and be like, hey, you know, the best team won and they won the cup. So
yeah. Like that, you know, I can be upset about losing to the champions, but at the same time,
I mean, we suck, dude. Holy
if
shit.
We found a way to beat Florida, I think we would have worked Edmonton.
I think we would have as well. Yeah,
like Zibby would have gotten back on the score sheet against Edmonton because Stuart Skinner's not good.
I know, dude.
He's not good. That's been Edmonton's problem for the last 6 years. That they don't have a goalie.
Yeah, because they have the best offense. They have the best line in the world.
They have the best player. What did Draisaitl and McDavid have combined in the playoffs? Like 70 points?
Yeah, I mean, I think McDavid had 40 assists, right? He broke Gretzky's record of assists. I think he ended with like 60 points or something like that.
That's outrageous.
Is that right? Like, I don't know. It's disgusting, though. They're both so good. But like, kind of a one-trick pony, though, you know?
I would say Draisaitl, because I don't think he's anything without McDavid.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they're just there all one line, maybe two lines, and just, so offensive-minded. They've got, like, Darnell Nurse.
Off this playoffs.
Evan Bouchard. Yeah, he's good. He's really good, too. But, yeah, man, could have been it. Next year, though.
Could have been.
Next year.
I don't know. Well, here's the thing. I didn't really have confidence going into this year with Laviolette.
And
he proved me wrong. So, I was maybe next year.
Yeah, not much is changing. I think the biggest difference between this year and next is that this feels like the last year of this window being open with this core.
Yeah.
Because, one, we don't know what's going to happen with Shesterkin's contract. He could very well, like, he's asking for, like, 12.5 right now.
And he can get
There's
that.
A chance that we don't get to re-sign him. And this could be our last year with him. I think that they have to go all in at the deadline. Like, trade some.
Oh, man. You just brought up the fact that just even more reason why I hate James Dolan.
Oh, the.
You heard about the whole Sphere shit?
Oh, yeah. I don't really believe that.
I believe it.
You believe it?
Yeah. Because he has been trying to be influential with the Knicks for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. And they haven't been good. And now he kind of hired Leon Rose, and now he's making every right decision that you can make. And now he's trying to dip his fingers into what the Rangers are doing. I don't care that you have the sphere out there.
Yeah.
You can trade back into the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and get back Frank Vetrano.
Yeah.
You need another scorer on that first line.
I would have Frank. I mean, obviously, I would have loved Gensel, you know.
I don't think
disgusting, but, like, that would have been an expensive rental, and we probably wouldn't have re-signed him this year.
Yeah, we wouldn't have.
But, I mean, I agree, man. The masterclass Drury put on in 2022, getting, you know, Kopp, Vetrano, Tyler Motte, and there was one more person.
Is it a D-man?
It was a D-man, yeah. But getting, like, that was, like, an amazing acquisition, yeah. Right? Where it was like, hey, like, not a lot of high-end, like, really highly touted players, but just all of the right players.
Yeah.
Which, you know, really, really contributed to that deep run in 22. I was, like, thinking that, oh, my God, maybe this is, like, the same thing this year. Maybe, like, Wenberg's going to be, like, actually this insane player.
He did score that huge goal.
He did, yeah.
Huge goal in the playoffs. That was single OT or double OT?
That was, I want to say, that was single OT. That was game two. No, that was game three. We were up 4-2 in the game, and they came back, and they tied it.
I was at the Met game that day for my sister-in-law's brother's birthday.
Nice.
We ran like 30 deep in a bus.
Nice. That's sick.
And we knew the game super was fun. On. We had a ton of Ranger fans there. So we went in there for like 3 innings. This is when the Mets were awful this
season.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I was like, I don't fucking want to watch them right now. Yeah. I'm going to go back, throw the TV on. We had a TV, small generator, and then had every Ranger fan that was there.
Yeah, I mean, I was heavily committed to the Rangers at that point, and I'm like kind of just getting back into Mets mode, you know.
Yeah, it was Rangers and Knicks for months.
Yeah,
and then when they both got eliminated, I'm like, all right, let me take a break from sports for like 2 days.
I know, I had to. Yeah,
yeah, dude, I can't stay away from it. It's the bane of my existence.
Me too, man. And it's funny. It's like my entire life I've kind of had a. I'm hesitant to say like I've lived like a double life because I haven't, but it's just like I definitely have two different distinct like sides of my life that I've, you know, have always just had and just had simultaneously. Like, you know, I grew up playing music like a lot.
Yeah.
But I also grew up as an athlete and I grew up playing sports in high school and college and stuff.
What'd you play?
I played soccer my entire life through high school. And then when I was in high school, I started playing rugby.
Okay.
And then I actually played rugby at Providence College.
Nice.
It's all club, you know, it wasn't like I got like a scholarship or anything, but it was pretty competitive, you know, and like I was like, it was still like, hey, like practice a couple times a week, games on the weekend. And it was something that just a part of my life that I equally enjoyed to music, but from just more of like, hey, that's how I got like, you know, my, like my physical, you know, thing out of the way and really was able to like satisfy that part of my life. And then, you know, I loved music from like an emotional standpoint and just from just like purely like interest of like, hey, this is something that like I can do for my entire life.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause now my brother is, I'm 26 now. He's going to be 33.
Okay.
He's about to have another kid.
Yeah.
In December. I can't wait for that little bugger to get.
Yeah. Uncle Will.
Yeah, dude, it's the best. Uncle life is my favorite life.
That's awesome.
But he's going to have to like dial it back in terms of playing sports. Like the reason why we're able to do this today is because the other teams are playing in the playoffs in the park, in Prospect Park right now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're talking about softball.
So we'll play tomorrow. And I know that there's going to come a time within the next couple of years where he's like, listen, I can't do this shit anymore.
Yeah,
like
totally.
My sister-in-law played rugby. Like she.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal rugby player. But she ended up in the last game that she played, it was in the playoffs. They ended up losing. It was bad. She ended up popping something in her foot and she needed to get surgery. On top of that, like my mom had to take a bunch of the responsibility.
Absolutely.
Of watching my niece, Brooke.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know there's going to come a time where he's going to have to hang up the cleats and it sucks. Cause I've always wanted to play competitive sports with him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is as competitive as it gets, beer league football.
Yeah, it's a serious.
Yeah, but you know? I played a ton of shit growing up. Like I feel like every kid plays soccer when they're three or four. So I played that for a little bit and then T-ball. And then I played on a flag football team that my dad coached. until I was like 14. Continued to play softball from like 15 in the park down here. I don't know if you'd, you'd seen that park.
Like Prospect?
No. The asphalt park.
Oh.
Did you take the train here?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you get up off the train.
Okay.
Did you walk over the bridge?
I kind of went the wrong way. Okay. I went out one way, was like going by the freeway, and then I took a right and took a right on like South 5th or North 5th.
East 5th.
Yeah. I was close.
Yeah, so
yeah.
East 5th, that asphalt park is where we played. My mom was in that league. My dad was in the league.
Oh, she grew up in this area.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. This is the house that I've grown up.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Nice, yeah. Dude.
I used to live all the way upstairs.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
It's funny. Because I'm 7 years younger than my brother,
mm-hmm.
like it's impossible to have an 18-year-old and an 11-year-old.
Yeah, of course.
The same like thing. So my brother ended up moving to we have an extension on our house that my brother moved into that used to be like my parents' like back room where they could just relax and do whatever. So he moved it back there. My grandmother used to live down here on my dad's side. And when she lived down here for a couple of years. And then when she passed away, my brother moved down here.
Got it.
So everything that has been down
That's
here,
awesome,
my dad
man.
Has renovated.
Yeah.
He does so much with his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he doesn't get enough credit.
I mean, that's awesome that you guys have like kept this in the family, though.
Yeah, it's
you know?
Crazy.
It's really, really special.
Yeah. So when my brother moved down here, I don't know, maybe 2 months after, my sister-in-law moved down here. And they obviously were just dating. But they lived down here for like 4 or 5 years. And then they moved out. Once they moved out, I'm like, now it's mine.
Yeah.
So yeah, this has been the spot.
Sweet. Yeah.
For as long as I can remember.
It's a nice pad.
Yeah, man. Again, it took a long time. When I first moved down here, I didn't really have anything on the walls. I just put a big Liverpool flag.
Oh, sweet.
On the wall.
Never walk alone.
Yep. That's what it says.
Yep.
Do you have a soccer team?
I don't really. You know, it's like I just grew up playing competitive soccer from the time I was like second grade or something. You know, or actually no, it was like kindergarten. I started playing like rec league and then did travel. Just was like another one of those things where it's like I just started doing it when I was a little kid and I just really liked it. And I never stopped.
Yeah.
I've got a big family. Like I've got 2 sisters and a brother.
Nice.
So for my parents, they were like, hey, you can like choose one sport and
yeah.
that's like your thing. Like
yeah,
you can do that,
expensive.
But like, yeah, it's expensive. And it's also like for them, they were like, hey, like we only have so many hours and like so much time that we can be like driving you guys around and stuff.
Yeah.
And also like for whatever reason, like in Southern Connecticut, like rec or like travel league soccer was like really intense.
Okay.
And like I played, it was like year round. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, soccer was in the fall, and then I could, like, play basketball in the winter, and then, like, baseball in the spring. Mm. It was like, you're playing on this team year-round, and if you don't want to do that, you're just not on the team.
That's
so, like, for me, it was just like, okay, like, I guess soccer is just, like, the only sport I play. And I was cool with that, you know, because I had, like, obviously other things going on.
Yeah.
But I never really, like, thought about that until, like, I got older, and, you know, I was meeting kids who were like, oh, yeah, like, I played football and baseball and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, like what
like,
the
where,
fuck?
Where
like
I
wish I could have played. I wish
this.
I could have done that,
yeah.
You know? I just couldn't cuz yeah, like my parents were spread really thin, you know. They had careers. They were driving us all over the state of Connecticut and stuff, so
I love that they had the not only parental awareness but self-awareness to be like, listen, we need to tell them like there's only 24 hours in a day. There's only enough money that we could put aside to have you guys pick one sport
mm-hmm.
and have that be the sport. I think that's really important to kind of set that because there's not any expectations of being like, oh, like I am really good at this sport. Like, why is there not more time?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, I think I knew like as a kid, I was like, I'm like not going to like be going to the Olympics for this stuff. Like I like it. It's a lot of fun, but I think, yeah, like my parents are really also good about just like setting like realistic expectations and being like, yeah, like you can do whatever you want to do. But, like, if you really want to do this, if you really want to, like, play soccer, like, professionally, like, we should, like, well, do something more than just, like, travel. And I never really was, like, super interested in that.
Okay.
I was just, like, I just want to, like, play and have fun and then also be able to do, like, the other fun things with my friends.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, like, it was, like, playing guitar and, like, being in a band was, like, a big part of that for my childhood. And it was, I always did what I could to make sure I could like juggle all of those things efficiently because I liked them all equally, you know.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure that I could like hit all of those boxes.
Yeah, I almost wish that I played one sport. Just nearly my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Like I played hockey for a little bit, and then needed an appendectomy. And it was too hard.
Yeah.
It's
expensive too, man. All that gear, all that driving around.
Like $1,000 on pads when I was like 13.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You're gonna outgrow those things in a year.
Like 6 months.
Yeah.
I still have my skates. That like my foot has not grown for fucking
likewise.
Decades.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always look back on those years that I'm like my parents really sacrificed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I played in only like a house league.
Yeah.
I was putting up like 45 points in 14 games.
Hell yeah,
against,
brother.
Against
hell yeah.
Scrubs. That's so funny. There's one video that I have hidden on YouTube somewhere. It's a kid that I knew played goalie.
Okay.
And it's a clip that me and my friends now talk about it all the time. Because before I started, I'll show you the video after the podcast. But before the play started, the goalie was just like spinning around.
Nice.
And you hear, after I score, you hear his mom in the back just yelling at him, like, why are you fucking spinning around and twirling?
Yeah.
guard the net.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, but it was so funny. Me and my friends talk about that video all
the
time.
I love that.
But yeah. Yeah. It was just really important. Like, I'm glad that I played all these sports.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like whenever I'm thrown into a situation, I just feel better because it's not as awkward as like people that haven't played sports
mm-hmm.
their entire life like deal with.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm like meeting new people, they're like, why are you so good at this? And I'm like, I don't really have an answer for it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's funny.
Yeah, no, it was fun. And, you know, I've got no regrets on any of that stuff. It's,
yeah.
It was all a lot of fun. I'm happy I did it because I think it also like, it opened my eyes to, like, now, like, I have such a greater appreciation, honestly, for music and just the arts in general, because I was able to kind of, like, do the whole sports thing growing up as well. And as I've gotten older, I just kind of, like, really made, like, a conscious decision and just realized, like, oh, like, this is something that I am just, like, more passionate about, you know? Like, I have, like, obviously, like, I think sports are really fun, but, like, I'm not able to, like, connect with it on, like, an emotional level
okay.
in the same way I am, you know, with music.
Mm-hmm.
And had I not, you know, had, you know, those trials and tribulations growing up of playing on teams and all that stuff, I don't know if I would have ever come to that conclusion, you know?
Yeah, that's really
important. So it's like, hey, like, I've done those things, and I'm able to kind of make a conscious decision of, like, you know, like, music is the thing that I really want to, like, pursue in my life, and just that community of people I really connect with.
Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I feel like whenever I play sports, I, like, kind of zone out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm in my own world where I feel the most comfortable. Now I'm thinking I maybe should have played more guitar when I was, like, 10.
It's never too late, man.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I got that for Christmas, so
yeah,
like,
that's awesome.
Trying to learn a little bit. I know, like, the first 15 seconds of Cigarette Daydreams by
okay.
Cage the Elephant.
Of course, yeah.
Cigarette
yeah.
Daydream.
Yeah. Great song.
And that was, it was a super easy song to, like, learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, I'll start with this.
Yeah, dude, why not? You know, like, there's, that's what's, like, actually so awesome about the world we live in right now is that learning new instruments and tutorials, like, it's just so accessible.
Yeah.
You can go on YouTube and you can find anything.
Yeah.
I it's actually funny. I used to, like, post a lot on YouTube as a kid. And there's still, like, some really old videos of me when I'm, like, a kid, like, teaching songs and stuff like that.
That's cool.
But yeah, it's like, if anybody wants to learn guitar or even, like, drums or bass, it's like, it's so easy to just, like, you know, find, like, tabs online.
Yeah. I have
or
the keyboard over there.
Go on fucking TikTok, and there's people who are, like, giving lessons, you know, and, you know, like we were talking about before, unlike sports, like, there's really no, like, physical expiration date on our ability
yeah.
to, like, be able to do these things, singing and stuff. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, you can be doing that into your old age. And I like, honestly, I sometimes get like imposter syndrome, or like, I'll feel bad. Like, damn, like, I'm not as good at guitar as I wish I was, or I'm not as good at singing as I was. But I always remind myself that, like, okay, well, if I'm just practicing now, then in 2 or 3 years, like, I'm gonna be so much better than I was
yeah.
at this point right now, you know? So, like, I And like that, like honestly, immediately will like make me feel so much like less stressed about it. Because I'm like, there's a lot of musicians who didn't start playing until they were in their 20s and stuff like that. But like, it's not about your age. It's about like your dedication to it and like your ability to actually like commit and be like, if you want to get good at this thing, like it's there. It's yours for the taking. And like, yeah, like you said, you're 26.
Yeah.
Dude, by the time you're 30, if you play guitar every day, you're going to be a fucking animal. I will tell you that right now.
You make a good argument.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. Yeah. You make a good argument. Yeah. I'll sit here and I've been trying to read more. So I just bought a Kindle on Prime Day. But I've been trying to read more and like the new NCAA came out. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do I get worked by my friends at NCAA and have a good time, or do I struggle and get mad at myself playing guitar?
You gotta put in the work though. You know, you gotta pay your dues.
Yeah, you gotta pay your dues.
Earn your stripes.
We're gonna dive right back into music.
Let's do it. Yeah.
I liked
that little break though. That was great. It felt nice.
Especially to like, I feel like it's rare to find a Ranger or Mets fan.
Yeah. Who's your? I mean, I don't really follow football anymore, but who would Jets. Be? Yeah, dude. We're aligned.
What about basketball?
I mean, I'm not actually a huge NBA fan. I would choose the Knicks. But, like, I'm actually a big Providence Friars fan.
Okay.
Because I went to Providence. And, obviously, you know, I like Big East Ball. Big East Ball is very fun to watch.
Electric. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was at like, Providence
like
when...
Action.
Yeah, when Villanova won the national championship, but, like, I was at Providence, like, both of those years, you know. So, like, we were, like, playing, like, very high caliber teams. Had, like, players that were, like, lottery picks and stuff like that.
Damn.
Like, it was cool.
That's sick.
But yeah, anyway, back to the music.
Back to the music. And we're creeping up on an hour. I'm going to have to clip a bunch of shit.
Yeah, it's all good.
Is there anything that you listen to in your free time as like a guilty pleasure?
Ooh, man, that's a good question.
I'll say mine first.
Yeah.
It's really not like a guilty pleasure because she's fucking amazing. I'll give you two. Leve.
Okay.
I can listen to Leve forever. On top of Leve, I've dove into the new Billie Eilish album.
Dude, that stuff is serious. That's like not guilty pleasure.
I mean, yeah.
Actually, no. I take that back. Anybody can have a guilty pleasure. You know, I think it's just how you define it. Are you defining guilty pleasure as in like, oh, like you're a little embarrassed to like tell people that you listen to that or like.
Yeah. Like if I'm in the car with my boys, I'm not throwing on Billie Eilish or Ava.
Okay.
That kind of feel.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I will tell you off the bat that one, like, I see you, you know, I hear where you're coming from.
I'm heard.
Billie Eilish, dude, Billie and Phineas are special.
Yeah.
They are special. They, like, they're both so incredibly talented, and they are at the level that they are at for a reason. Like, Phineas is an insane producer, so talented, and, like, Billie is just, you know, she's immortal, you know, like.
Yeah.
But
she has one of those vocal tones that, sorry to cut you off.
No, not at all.
She has one of those vocal tones, and her and Olivia Rodrigo have me in a fucking chokehold.
Mm-hmm.
Their vocal tones, like, strike me on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the falsettos that they hit, I'm like, this is not an actual human singing. This is a angelic deity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some kind of celestial goddess that's pinging my ears right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. Let me give you like an actual guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Chappell Roan is like,
Chappell's also great, dude.
Yeah.
Chappell's killing it right now.
Yeah,
I would say, and I would say, okay, I don't really have like, I don't know if I really have like a guilty pleasure because like, I really like a lot of the music I listen to. I would say something that's like, out of like my genre of playing. That I listen to a lot, and something I'm listening to a lot right now is Claro.
Oh,
I mean, Charm is really good.
God,
but
that
even
fucking album
but
has been on repeat.
Yeah,
since it dropped.
even like Claro's early stuff
is
really great as well. And I understand, I see the sentiment of like if I was like with like my college buddies, I probably wouldn't throw on Charm or you know Sexy to Someone.
Yeah,
that
exactly. You're not gonna throw
that wouldn't
song
be
on.
It. And I think in like in the same vein, in the last year, I've been listening to a lot of Big Thief, Adrienne Lenker, who's an incredible songwriter, like and very much like an indie folk artist. She has her own like very successful solo career, and then her group Big Thief released this album in, I want to say, 2022, like end of 22, called Dragon New War Mountain, I Believe in You. And I didn't really listen to a lot of like folk music growing up. It wasn't like my preferred genre, but the minute I started listening to this record, I was really, really captured. It's just the lyrical content is amazing. The melodies are fantastic. If it's like, if you're looking to feel something, like I would highly recommend that album.
It's on the list.
I think one of my favorite memories of listening to that Big Thief record was it was like a blizzard this past winter, and I just like went and walked around Williamsburg and just like went down to the water and just like listened to the whole record. It's like an hour and a half long, and just listened to the whole thing. So that's what I would say is like guilty pleasure, more in the sense of it's like, I don't know if I would ever like make a record like that. I just don't think that like musically it's like it's me, you know. I would love to, but like I don't know if it would sound as good as, you know.
Can't hurt to try it.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, I would say that'd be some of my guilty pleasures right there.
Yeah, dude, that the Claro album.
It's great, dude. I've listened to it so many times.
Yeah. Like, even just guilty pleasures in general. Like, I'll listen to, and that's what I'm about to bring up is not a guilty pleasure at all, but seeing Aretha Franklin perform Natural Woman at the Kennedy Center Honors for Carole King.
Mm-hmm.
I watch that video all the time.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. All right. I think we can wrap it here.
Cool. I mean, if you got any more questions, I'm happy to like dive into songs and stuff like that. Whatever you got, dude.
Let me think. I mean, you could tell me the story behind Niagara.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, and then we'll wrap that up.
Yeah, because I know we had started talking a little bit before about like the writing process and things like that, and you'd ask if it was all like personal, and yeah, Niagara is definitely it all kind of came to me through this experience I had with my ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
As
it does.
As most of my songs do, actually, yeah.
Okay.
But so essentially, like, I had the whole, like, rhythm section, like, you know, the chord progression, every part of that song was written, I just was stuck on the lyrics, okay. Right? And pretty much there was a situation where it was, like, my ex-girlfriend, it was her birthday, and her and her friends were like out drinking all night at these bars. I was bartending at the time, and I like went and met them at the bar Niagara like later that night. And at this point, like everybody was just trashed.
Yeah.
And she like lived in East Village. So I'm walking her home with her roommate, and we're walking through Tompkins Square Park. And there's like that playground there.
Yeah.
And she's like just so drunk that she just starts like sprinting away. And she doesn't see that there's like the Olympic like parallel bars, and they're metal. And she sprints into this thing, Jesus. Like full on. Like I see like her hit it like head cocked back, and she's just like on the ground. I'm like right there. I sprint over. I'm like, oh my god, like are you okay? And I see that like her eye is just like totally cut open, Jesus. Bleeding all over the place. I'm like freaking out because I'm like not even drunk.
Yeah,
I like just got off of work. I like went had like a drink with them and like. And I like call the ambulance and stuff. Like I take her to the hospital, end up spending like the whole night in the hospital with her. She's like getting stitched up and she had like a concussion and stuff. She ends up being, you know, okay. Like we go home like the next morning, and thankfully there was nothing, more serious. And so, that song was just about that night, you know? So it was about like the idea of like, hey, you know, like if you listen to the lyrics, like, midnight marches through the park, festive feelings after dark, on a night where you were meant to smile. A mighty wind from 10th and B came and swept you off your feet. The flashing lights from the ambulance were seen from way uptown. So that was like what all the verses were about. And then, you know, the whole sentiment of it was like, hey, like, I love you. I'm here for you. And like, you know, you know, I'll never leave you down. You know, I'll always be there to kind of pick you back up.
Very nice.
So, and that song, the lyrics of that song came to me like the day after it happened. I was like laying in her bed, just like so sleep deprived. And I was just like thinking about it. And then I just started typing. And like the whole song probably was done within like an hour or something like that. So when I was saying before, like everything is like so, it's very personal. It's really like from real things. Brand New was the same way. It was like, you know, I just started dating this girl and it was like, same girl. Yeah. And, it was just like, hey, like this is like such an exciting time. Like this person makes me feel like a brand new person, you know? So it's very much like a love song. And I kind of realized, so the song that I was telling you about before, Better Man, which is the one that we'll be releasing next, I realized after I wrote that, that ended up actually really just kind of being like a trilogy of songs of my relationship with this person. You know, we broke up about a year ago, and so Brand New was from when we first started dating. You know, like I was saying, things are so exciting, just like that. That really just kind of like euphoric feeling of like finding somebody that, you know, you're falling in love with and you're having such a great time. That's what that song is all about. And then Into Niagara, where like you're in the relationship, like everything is great, you know, things happen, but you know, you overcome those obstacles. And at the end of the day, like you're always there. I'll do anything for this person because they're my person. And then, you know, Better Man is actually kind of like the unfortunate part of some relationships when they come to an end. You know, and, you know, there was not really a situation with us where there was like, oh, something happened and it just like this like big blow up. It was just like we dated for close to 3 years and we were just kind of moving in two different directions. And, you know, I kind of realized like, you know, like I think that I need somebody else in my life. And I think that you would be better off with somebody who's more akin to you as well. So Better Man is just kind of all about that. So yeah, I'm excited for people to kind of, you know, give that one a listen. And like I was saying, like that one, and then the another tune that I wrote that I also played at the showcase called Lonely are my like attempts of really trying to like dig into the lyrics a bit more and provide like a bit more depth other than just like the happy-go-lucky type thing that I've generally kind of written.
Did you ever like get contact from your ex-girlfriend after you put those two songs out?
No. Yeah.
Are you guys on speaking terms or?
Not really. I mean, like I would like to be, I mean, full transparency, like I ended the relationship with her and, I think that, you know, she just respectfully just didn't really want to be friends, which I understand. Yeah, you know, I've got no,
understandable thing.
I've got, you know, no harm, bad feelings towards her, like whatsoever. You know, I mean, I would like to, though, honestly. But, you know, I also, like, totally respect her feelings on the situation, too. And, like, if she doesn't want that, like, I'm never going to, like force that upon somebody, you know? It's not my decision to make.
Yeah, I went through something similar. I dated this girl for a little over a year. And we broke up a little close to a year ago, probably September of last year. It was just one of those things where, like, we weren't really, like, on the same page.
Yeah.
Not on the same page, but, like, we're two different people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of growing that not only, like, started when her and I were dating, but even after. And it was one of those things where, like, I don't know if it was the same for your relationship, but we had each other's locations. And after we broke up, it still, like, stayed the same. Like, we were on speaking terms. And then a couple months ago, she posted that she had a new boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, all right. Like,
yeah.
Let me
get the... We're done with that, yeah.
But, yeah, nothing, like, it's no hard feelings or anything. It's just one of those things where two people grow apart.
Yeah.
But,
And, yeah, it's... I'm sorry, what were you saying?
No. I was pretty much done with what I was saying.
Yeah, and I was just saying, I mean, like, it's definitely, like, it's definitely, like, a hard truth to swallow sometimes, you know? But, like, I think ultimately, at the end of the day, like, me and my, you know, ex-partner, like, I think we were both better off in the situation. And, obviously, at the time, it was really tough. Like, I mean, I was, like, really torn up over it for, like, a couple of months. But, you know, things happen for a reason. And that's, again, just another reason why I'm really, like, lucky and happy that I have music in my life, because that was such a natural way for me to really just, like, get my emotions out about the situation and, like, just kind of, like, speak my truth on it. And it's something that, like, I have forever now. And, like, you know, no matter what, every time I listen to Brand New, you know, I think about, oh, like, that was a really great time in my life. And same thing with Niagara. Like, that was an insane experience I had with her. And you know what? Like, it's, I'm really happy though that when I listen to that song, I think about that time because that was a really great time in my life. And yeah, you know, that's, again, just a, it's a, just a nice thing about music. It really, it keeps things like in the universe, you know, like I would be sad if I like forgot those, you know,
it's almost like you have a physical copy of a memory.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is for me. And because, like, again, these things I read about are my real life. And I would love to be able to, like, you know, look back one day when I'm an old man and just kind of have looks like a musical anthology just of my life.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of my goals just as a musician. It's kind of like, it's like almost like a record book for me.
Yeah.
And even the songs that I was writing back in the day with my old groups, like, we still have some of those. I still have all of those songs and stuff. And I look back and there's situations from like 10 years ago. And I listen to the song and I'm like, wow, yeah, like, I'm brought like right back to that moment where I remember like writing that song and I remember those feelings and those emotions. So that's why I write music.
Yeah.
It's for those reasons.
That was like, just thinking about playing music and being like, this is basically a record of my entire life. Like, I keep looking at the lyrics book that Paul McCartney wrote.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine the amount of memories that came across his mind when he was just talking about all of the albums that he wrote with the Beatles and and the Wings even.
Exactly. Like, that's his all that's music about his daughter life, and you know, his relationships and stuff. And it's a really special thing. And the thing that makes it even cooler is just like being able to get up and perform these things for other people, you know,
to have
and
them then create a memory in, in their life.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's like, I feel really fortunate to be able to do that. And to like, bring joy and fun into somebody, even if it's just like for like a Friday night and they never remember it again. But if they're like, hey, I remember that.
Yeah.
That was a sweet concert at like the Mercury Lounge. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I did my job, you know?
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you decide what you're going to do? You do Niagara?
Oh.
Do you I was going to say, do you want to sing? Because I know you're on
the boat. I'll sing. I was Niagara and Brand New. What do you want to hear, man? I'll leave it up to you.
Oh, man, don't do that to me.
Yeah.
That's the reason I asked you is because you make the decision. What do you like performing more?
You know what? I'll do Brand New. Okay. I feel like that'll be better for the voice right now.
All
right,
cool.
No, I'll do Niagara. Let's do Niagara. Yeah, we'll do Niagara. All
right.
You want me to just grab it?
Yeah, I'm gonna do a little sign off.
Cool.
This has been Behind the Artist with Will Borowski. Dude, what a conversation.
Yeah, man, this was awesome.
Transitioning to Rangers talk and a little bit of Grimace Mets talk was definitely something that I did not expect, but absolutely welcomed. Where can people find you?
Yeah, people can find us at Big Honey NYC on Instagram. Obviously, just Big Honey on all streaming platforms. Yeah, but yeah, appreciate you having me on, man. This was an absolute blast.
This was great.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to get into Niagara.
Let's do it.
What's up? This is Spencer from Big Honey, and this is our tune, Niagara. Marches through the park, festive feelings after dark, on a night where you deserve to smile. A mighty wind from 10th and B came and swept you off your feet. The flashing lights were seen from way uptown. Stop shooting me down, don't be fooled, 'cause I'm here for you. When you come around, oh, it's okay, 'cause I'll always need you. You left me shaking and my heart racing when your life hit the ground. 'Cause I'll be here to follow by your side tomorrow, 'cause I'll never leave you down. Crosstown lift, doctors on their late night shift, watching out so you can get some rest. Oh, we've all been through this before, but please sit still, he's got one more stick so we can fix that aching soul. Stop shooting me down, don't be fooled, 'cause I'm here for you. When you come around, well, it's okay, 'cause I'll always need you. You left me shaking and my heart racing when your life hit the ground. 'Cause I'll be here to follow by your side tomorrow, 'cause I'll never leave you down. 'Cause I'll never leave down, 'cause I'll never leave you down, 'cause I'll never leave you down.
Thank you.